ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You've heard it all before 1,000 times. We live it, like it or not. In a digital world, just about every aspect of our lives is now online. We work, entertain, bank, our healthcare, even our social lives to a remarkable degree. Now, the technological or the technology arrived with all sorts of utopian promises of more efficient, cleaner, greener futures. But in reality, the digital world is full of dirty secrets, from the graphic mining of China to the millions of power-hungry data centers that keep us on their web. My next guest, as I said, it's his second appearance on the program, is Guillaume Pitron, and he is an award-winning journalist and documentary maker from France. He's the author now of The Dark Cloud, how a digital world is costing the Earth, how the digital world is costing the Earth. It's published by Scribe. When we send an email, we imagine it sort of floating through cyberspace and then magically landing in an inbox. But let's begin by learning about the physical journey that an email, when we send it, takes. Guillaume?
Hello, Philippe Adams. Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, you're asking me about the trail of an email. Basically, when I'd like to send an email to my neighbor who is sitting next to me in my office, just 2 meters away, actually this email travels for thousands of kilometers. And my email will first leave my phone, and then the signal of the email will reach a 4G antenna. It will be turned into a pulsation of light into the fiber optic networks, going down the sidewalk of Sydney, if I stay in Sydney when I send this email. And then this email will go through the Pacific Ocean, because it's probably been sent on the United States account, such as Gmail. The email will be stored in various data centers in the United States, and then it will come back from the data center through the Pacific Ocean again at a speed of 200,000 kilometers back to Australia. And it will be arriving within a second on the phone of your neighbor. So whenever you're wondering what is the real physical distance between you and your neighbor in the office to whom you're just saying a thank you email, well, basically the real distance is not 3 meters, but in reality, thousands of kilometers, maybe even 15,000 kilometers. This is the reality of the digital world.
Guillaume, that is just so absolutely mind-blowing and astonishing. Earlier this year, we did a program on the horrors of cobalt mining in the Congo, cobalt being one of the rare materials our smartphones need. Now, please tell me about your own mission to the graphite mines in China.
We shouldn't forget, Philippe Adams, that everything that is so-called virtual, dematerialized, the cloud, as it's been said, all these wonderful words stem from a scar in the ground. And as a journalist, as an on-the-field journalist, I've been traveling for many years on the trail of this digital world, and that took me first into the mines of China, where the graphite is being extracted for ending up in the batteries of our smartphones. We all have a few grams of graphite within our pocket, and this graphite mostly comes from China. And you've got to go in the province of Heilongjiang, north of China, where nobody wants to see it, to see you, especially the Chinese authorities. And over there, you come across the mines, the refineries. You speak to the people working in the refineries. You speak to the peasants around, explaining you the impacts of graphite mining and refining on the environment. All these people are very much conscious whenever it comes to the physical impact of digital technologies of what it costs to them for their health, for the environment, for the agriculture. And we just have no idea about that. So everything has been starting over there. I took some risks, actually, filming, bringing some witnesses, some people speaking out about these impacts, but just for us to understand that everything comes at a cost. And it's not because you've got a wonderful, beautiful phone in your hand that doesn't mean that someone has to pay the environmental cost for it.
I understand that in the region there's a huge amount of illegal dumping. There's cataclysmic effects on local communities.
Definitely, yes. You know, the Chinese, as I say, which I heard when I was over there, they say the mountains are high and the emperor is far. That means that Beijing is 2,000 kilometers south, and that's a long distance. And whatever a Chinese official wants to enact, like an environmental law, that may not apply in such regions which are far away from the central power. So basically, you've got illegal mining, illegal dumpings, and, you know, whatever the regulations over there, basically, industrials may act the way they want. And that comes at a cost for the environment. That comes at a cost for the agriculture. That comes at a cost for the health of the people. I used to interview Chinese workers in the refineries saying the powder of the graphite, we may not breathe them. So we cover our mouth with tissues in order to not breathe this powder. Otherwise, our lungs become like stone.
Oh, heavens above. Now, let's look at telephones for just a moment. In the 1960s, a telephone required only 10 raw materials, like zinc and aluminium. I understand from you that they now need more than 50 raw materials.
Even 60 or 70. A phone is a wonderful object today with which you can not only make a phone call on the ABC from Paris, but also, browse on a dating website, order a pizza or a taxi, geolocalize yourself, make videos and pictures. But all this means that you have a wonderful and powerful device which needs to fit into your pocket. And for this, you need lots of additional minerals compared to old phones, minerals very much diluted in the Earth's crust. And this is what we call rare metals. You invited me 3 or 4 years ago to speak about that on your show. And that comes at a cost. And we need to understand that the more we make small objects, Philip Adams, the more we need materials diluting the Earth's crust, the more we need to move rock, process it with energy, electricity, water, in order to produce these metals. So whenever it's small in your pocket, think actually that the material impact is even bigger. Whenever it is light in your pocket, think that the material impact is heavy.
And of course, it's not just the phone, it's the laptop, it's the television set, it's almost everything that we like and admire about 21st century living.
This shall be multiplied by the 34 billion electronic devices that are right now working on Earth. And this is just accelerating. We're just at the beginning of the internet. We're just starting producing data from all these wonderful devices. Eventually, maybe tomorrow, we will even have an avatar in the metaverse, and we'll produce even more data, and we will have new devices in order to have a virtual life in this metaverse. All this is material impact for the devices, and all this is data. Data which is extracted from the phone in a way, which is being processed and stored in data centers, which must actually travel around the world for being stored somewhere. So this is undersea cables. We are just at the beginning of a huge, amazing, not understood physical impact of what we call virtual and the cloud.
I want to get onto the cloud in just a minute, but as Al Jolson famously said when introducing the talkies, you ain't seen nothing yet. And we get a glimpse of what the future is going to look like with Estonia. Take us to Estonia, which is a tiny country, you know, 1.3 million, but the most connected on Earth.
Estonia, after the fall of the USSR, was restarting from scratch, rebuilding a new state. And because there was so much relying on transparency, they wanted, right, to experience a much more transparent future than the past they had experienced with the Russians, with the Soviets. Basically, they built an entire e-administration. Everything that you want to do with your administration in Estonia, you can do it online. Like 99% of every action can be done online. There is even an e-death service. Basically, when you die, someone can declare that you died on the administration, and automatically some electronic services will take care of everything regarding the admin stuff regarding your death. The only thing you can't do actually online is only get married. You have to be physically present to get married in Estonia. But besides that, that's a very much evolved country in this matter. And there's so much proud about this, because also it entails a good ecological impact. We're going to use less paper. You're not going to have to take your car to go to the administration. You can do everything online. So they're also proud of this e-administration because it brings positive environmental impact.
And what are they ignoring?
Well, they do ignore all the basic infrastructure that's all around. They have just no idea about that. And whenever as a journalist you speak to them about that, it's as if you were speaking about something which is just non-existent. And this is, the loophole in a way here. This is the misunderstood underlying impact of this fluidified life. And you're right, to be willing to have such a fluidified and simple access, easy access to the administration. But the really basis of what makes this life possible is a complex web of cables and satellites and data centers which must be run in some way, and they just don't speak about that at all.
You've mentioned the cloud. We imagine that it's this invisible space in the air where all our data lives. But what is actually powering the cloud?
Well, the cloud is a myth, right? The very first sense of the word is a dangerous myth. We may believe that it's a cloud, right? I will store my data into something which is non-existent, which is on the top of my head. The cloud is reality. In reality, is a server. And your Facebook account, your WhatsApp account, your Instagram account, your Twitter account is on the cloud. And it's stored literally somewhere in the world. You don't even know where. And you access your server from your phone, which is in the cloud. And you have thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of servers into warehouses. They are being piled in what we call racks. And you can enter literally the warehouses and see all these servers, which are the cloud. And I was once in the cloud. Literally, I went into the cloud. And you can listen to the cloud. You can listen to it. It has a very specific sound. It's like the sound of a beehive, because all the servers are making little noises. And when you multiply that by millions of servers, you feel like you're into a beehive. This is the sound of the cloud. You can listen to internet.
And from the cloud to beneath the water, as you made the point earlier, data is also transmitted through the oceans.
The cables have been winning the battle over satellites back in the 70s and 80s. And today, 95 to 99% of our data is actually crossing the oceans from one server to one another, from one phone to one data center and one another. Forget about the satellites for now. Elon Musk will be more important in the future with the space satellites. Maybe in the future there will be more data transferred through the space. But today, everything that is emails, likes, tweets, share, and whatever goes through the oceans. That's the best way, actually, to make the data travel. And as I speak to you right now, there are, the latest account is 486 cables, submarine cables, crossing the oceans from one continent to one another. If you make the total kilometers of all of them, that amounts to 1.2 million kilometers of cables, which are very thin cables, and in which you have the fiber optics.
And, of course, vulnerable to attack.
it can be vulnerable to attacks. And this is where there's a geopolitics of submarine infrastructures, of internet infrastructures, and there's geopolitics behind each of your email. Countries want to be sovereign on their infrastructures. France, Australia, China want to own their own vital, critical cables so that they don't rely upon the willingness of a country such as the United States or a company such as Google to say, huh, you're going to get an access to internet or you're not going to get an access to internet. So everyone wants to be sovereign. And then comes the war in Ukraine. And suddenly, Zelensky and also other officials in Ukraine say, but there is a risk that the Russian may actually cut some of our cables, also submarine cables, and then that may pose a problem to our capability to wage a war against Ukraine. How do we do to get protected against that? So there is a risk that tomorrow in the future, some cables might be actually cut by countries, as part of a hybrid war, either as a hybrid warfare, and we must understand that this is, in a way, kind of a fragile infrastructure.
You've coined a phrase which I admire enormously. You talk about us becoming digitally obese.
Yeah. Yeah. Philip Adams, we're just starting internet. We are in the Jurassic age of internet. We don't even understand what kind of usages we're going to do out of internet in 10 years when the iPhone 24 will be released by Apple. In this age, we will be in a world where we will be even more than what we are today, already obese. We will be hyper-connected.
We've got to go. Look, your book is marvellous, and I wholeheartedly support every listener getting a copy. My guest is Guillaume Pitron, and the book is called The Dark Cloud, How the Digital World is Costing the Earth, and it's published here by our friends at Scribe.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.